Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/StephenTheWarman. Also, you're listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the direct blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are at the most efficient way of getting the show. Enter Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine, or enter Lord Gaul into the iTunes search engine, and my show pops right up. Lord Gaul was my username back when I fell in love with the sport. K1 fans, Kakatugi, K1 USA, and so on. So, a lot to talk about. I'm going to go ahead and jump into a lot of results. I waited a little bit longer because I was waiting for some clear footage of the Yakao fights to pop up. They did not, so I just had to decide to just kind of go with the show as is. But got a lot of results to talk about, and I've got one show to preview. We'll go ahead and jump right in. First of all, I will start off with the Yakao show. And the England knows how to do it. You know, I've always credited them as being the best as far as having their fan base consistently support combat sports in general, whether it be boxing or Muay Thai or whatever. Like, I've always really, really appreciated their role. So if you are listening to this show and you're from England, shout out to you, and the world looks to you as a country that really supports their athletes. Plus, they've done the greatest job of having a Muay Thai scene that mirrors the kickboxing scene in Holland. And what I mean by that simply is there's a lot of gyms in a small place. You know, like, the country's not very big, but there seems to be a lot of gyms in a very small country. Same thing with Holland. Like, it's, as Ernesto Hu said when I interviewed him for the documentary, he said, there's like 100 gyms in Holland. So, you know, it takes 3 hours to get all over the country. And with 100 gyms, you know, they're going to keep producing athletes for you to compete against and get better off of. So some of their shows, you know, for a C class, B class, with like maybe one A class on it, their shows are going to have so many opportunities for you to compete on them. And England is that version in full rules Muay Thai. Their fights are all 5 rounds, and the first fight, your C class is usually 1.5 minutes per round, and then you move up to 2 minutes a round, then you go 3 minutes a round. But the whole structure is geared towards the full rules Thai, and it's a pretty good structure. Because of that, they've got athletes that get fights, and that's so huge. That's something that we struggle with here in North America. It's hard for us to get the fights. So, because they get the fights and they get the shows, and you get parents and people who've been following an athlete from, you know, in the case of Jordan Watson, from like 10 years old to like 24 years old, you get to see a body of work and have an audience of people grow to love someone and watch them compete. And supporting an athlete is part of the culture of sports in general, but it's something special in combat sports where everybody wants to go out and see their guy fight or see their girl fight. So Yakao did it again. They put on a great show. I'm not going to talk about all the fights because, again, I was only, you know, video of around here and some phone footage. I wasn't able to put together the best breakdown of the fights, but I'll do my best to, you know, give you guys a rundown. And I'll just say what it means for the sport of kickboxing and moving forward. So, Yakao world title on the line, 70 kgs. Yakao 18, we'll start with that one first. Jordan Watson gets, I won't say the revenge fight, but he wins the rubber match, if you will, with Sonny Dalback. Jordan Watson is probably got, of a Westerner, the fastest body kick in the world. It comes up so fast and hard. It's amazing how quickly his switch kick comes up or his power right leg. He's got a good Thai pacing about him. He's got the right kind of slickness. He's got the right kind of look. He really should be a star that's promoted and pushed. It's, you know, said that Glory is going to return to England. Jordan Watson's got to be in your card. Jordan Watson's got to be one of the stars that you get behind for the future, as is Sonny Dalback. Sonny Dalback been spending a lot more time in Thailand, still fighting in Japan, still building a resume as an international kickboxer and Muay Thai fighter. He was ready for this. Jordan Watson took himself out of his comfort zone, you know, still got the trainer that he loves and so on, but he decided that he was going to move to Thailand for a lot of this training camp, and it showed up. Of course, Richard Smith in the corner as always. They put together, you know, the game plan was simple, but it was more Jordan Watson with just a little bit more savviness to keep him from getting hit as much. Sonny Dalback, still, you know, Sonny's going to find his offense, and it was a good fight, and Watson got the decision, and Sonny was happy with it. Shout out to Sonny Dalback for you know, doing the rematch and going back to England again. You know, like, it's just he saw it as a big fight opportunity, a traveling opportunity, and he didn't mind going on the road to defend it. He won it on the road. So I think that that was really good stuff. It's what you want to see. These are elite names in kickboxing and in Muay Thai. I want to see Sonny Dalback. He's your guy to fight Murat Gregorian. They were going to do the fight before, but he's the guy to fight him for the K1 title if he wants to stay there. Clearly, he's good to fight anybody in glory. Sonny Dalback versus Anatoly Moiseev would be a fun fight. There's good stuff out there for Sonny if he wants to return to glory as well. As for Jordan Watson, it's just about consistency. He was set to, basically, he was a replacement to go against Georgia Petrosian in April, and then it turns out that the damage that he carried with him after the fight with Sonny Dalback left him in a position where it wasn't, he wouldn't heal in time enough to get back and compete in kickboxing. So he's going to go ahead and take that time off, maybe return at the end of May or early June. It's just, for me, it's just all about him being active, competing as much as possible. And really, it's about him being on, you know, being showcased as a star. Jordan Watson would have been perfect for K1 Max, if K1 Max is still around, because he's got that look, you know, he's younger, the girls love him, he's a dedicated, he's been in a relationship for a while, so I just mean that the girls are attracted to him, but like, he has a young look about him, he has the future of the sport type of look about him, despite what he does when he competes. Turns out he's an awesome fighter too, but that's who you want to build your brand on. You want to build your brand on guys who have that look and so on, but him, and I look at him as one of the future stars in the sport. I, you know, look at Josh Shaughnessy. Those guys, it's not just that they can fight. You know, they've got a look about them too, and that matters a lot. So good stuff for Watson moving forward, and I'm hoping that he's competing at least at the end of May, because he's always all action. Next fight on this card I'm going to talk about is Ben Hodge as he gets victory over Christian Baia. Christian Baia is a Dutch-based fighter, trains in Holland, and he gets a lot of international opportunities. He struggled to get his hands raised as of late, but, you know, credit to Ben Hodge, who's just too slick, too skilled in full rules Muay Thai. Christian hurt his arm early, I think, on one of Ben Hodge's kicks. I don't know if it necessarily broke his arm, but it injured it badly, and it completely affected how Christian Baia fought for the rest of the fight. Ben Hodge got the nod. Clearly, he's got to compete more, and he's got to Baia's a one step forward, and now he's going to take another one. It's about putting yourself out there and finding out who's the next best guy. Now, Hodge doesn't need to go from Christian Baia to Yotsen Klei, but ideally, we want him to push himself forward. Next fight, I think I'll break down, is Solomon Wicksteed. He is stopped by Jake Pardee. It's weird because I thought that if you had, you know, outside looking in, I definitely leaned towards Wicksteed winning this fight just because I'm a little bit more familiar with him than Jake Pardee. But, you know, shout out to Jake Pardee, who gets the stoppage victory. I was not able to get any of this fight, any footage of this fight. So, but I'm definitely curious to see more from Pardee moving forward. Maybe he's the kind of guy to go get Ben Hodge. Maybe they fought before. I'm just not as familiar with him. The female fight of Amy Perny, she gets a TKO victory over Fanny Ramos. Perny, I need to see more of her. This is kind of my first kind of introduction to her, and this is from a guy who really pays attention to the women's Muay Thai kickboxing game. Want to see more of her down the road. I think the fight with Fanny Ramos is a start, but let's see if we can build on it. The big thing for them is if they're going to use her once, they get to use her twice. That's how you got to build your brand. They've got some stars, you know, in the country, you know, Dakota DeChiva. They've got young stars that are female that need to get that kind of exposure. And it starts with this kind of fight, but you got to bring them back. You know, you got to use your athletes more than once. So if you just have that, you know, nostalgic female fight here and there, it won't push the women's game. You need consistency. So it's a good fight. I'm glad Amy won it, but I want to see more of her moving forward down the road. And anytime you get a stoppage, it's always a big deal, you know. So I was able to get a decent view of this. This video had popped up, and it was a decent view of it, and it was a pretty solid stoppage. I think that, you know, Amy's skilled, but I want to see more. There were a couple other fights in that card, but again, I didn't see them, so I'll just kind of mention them. On Danny Harrison Little, lost a 4-round decision. He had to retire to Jack Kennedy. And then at 80 kgs, David Soa lost by TKO to Darren Howison. So I just want to bring those up. Again, younger fighters, I don't even know if those were the full rules, but I just, I don't know if they did the whole fives or if they did, you know, threes. I'm not sure. All I wanted to do is make sure that I added them as a mention. Going to go ahead and move to Yacal 17 again in England. Just a, kind of a two-part card. That's kind of how they get down. Liam Harrison gets a win over Tetsuya Yamada. This is a nice win. Liam Harrison, as I said before, he's probably one of the most recognizable international names in Muay Thai. He's got, if I were to put a, even though he's still a pretty young guy, you know, I think he's 26, 27. I'll have to get that for sure, but he's still a young guy. He is the kind of guy who, and I'll take that away, he might be older than that, but I'm pretty sure that's where he's, his age falls around. But he's the kind of athlete that the more he competes, the better it is. And I love that he's, you know, the Lion Fight champion, that they brought him over, so they need to bring him back. I want to see him fight again. And I love that, you know, Tetsuya Yamada is a guy who has, you know, success in Lion Fight as well. Clearly a fun fight for Liam Harrison. And it's a guy who's fought Sanchai, a guy who's fought Anawat, a guy who's fought the elites of the elites. I mean, he really is a special name, but I think the thing that pushes his brand, his international name more, is when he goes against international guys at 65 kgs. Masaki Nori, as awesome as he is, he's able to get a stoppage victory over Liam Harrison. Liam Harrison had the low kicks working early, so he was in good shape there. I want him to go against any of those guys. I'd love to see him go against Kufa Ertex. I'd love to see him go against Masaru Glender. He is that level of kickboxer as well as that level of full rules Muay Thai fighter. So I definitely want to see him continue to compete. You know, he can come back to America, take on, you know, Kevin Ross. I'd still fight that was talked about that never materialized. I'd love to see that. Anything goes for Liam Harrison. He really is a special athlete, special fighter. Good fan base. They've been supporting him for a while, since he's like 18 years old. And I want to see more of him competing in general. You know, same as Jordan Watson. Just small gym in Leeds that's produced some two really world-class athletes. They've got more, but those guys are the notable ones. Tetsuya Yamada, he can compete in anything. I love that he's been really Muay Thai focused. He's, you know, fought Thai fight before Thai fight turned into what it is. He's, you know, fought online fight. Of course, he's got the win over Kevin Ross. Got two wins over Kevin Ross. He's a very entertaining, exciting fighter. Clearly, there's going to be, you know, he's got a head kick loss to Sanchai and so on. But when he looks back on his career, I think he's making the most of it. He trains hard and he's getting international fight opportunities. So shout out to him for going out and taking on this fight. Next fight on the card. Sometimes you have to have these experiences where you really want to test yourself and it doesn't go in your favor. And one of the ones that I bring up on this show quite often is the Paul Briggs, when he was the all-everything fighter and, you know, 18 years old, best guy in Australia. He goes over to Japan to test himself, knocks out the world champion, and then he goes, I got to go to Thailand and test myself. Goes to Thailand, and he goes against Jamad, and Jamad stops him with low kicks after really just kind of smashing him. And then after that, Paul Briggs looks at the camera when they're talking to him, and he goes, I'm glad I got to know it, because I went to Japan, and I won, and I needed to know where I stood. I needed to know what this level of athlete was. So when he came in and he competed to the best of his ability and it didn't go his way, it didn't stop him. It just kind of sent the message that this is how good the level is out there and this is what I have to do to compete. Paul Briggs went on to have a great Muay Thai career and even a world champion boxing career. Enter Manachai, as he is from Sanchai's gym. Very skilled, been doing this for a long time. And Luke Turner, this is going to be the young upstart who's going to take the opportunity to go against the age now doesn't really come into play here, because both guys are younger guys. But Luke Turner he's one of the nicest guys I met. I visited their gym. It's 2016 now, so it's 5 years ago. Man, that makes me feel old. But I visited their gym, and he had gone out to a Thai stadium, and he stayed. He won a regional title out there, competed, picked up the game, loved it. He, you know, has a good rhythm about him, Thai rhythm. He struggles with better athletes and stronger fighters, but Luke brings it. You know, he's got he plays the game well, And this was an opportunity for him to dare to be great. He was testing himself. And Manachow was better. Like, he was a better fighter, was more skilled all over, and really showed elite skill set. But Turner, it's good that you challenge yourself in this way. You know, I was saying it before that I think at some period of time, someone at 65 kgs has got to challenge Liam Harrison in England. Because right now it's like everybody goes, Liam's just a class above, hands off. Whereas Fabio Pinca, every once in a while, he gets a local guy from France who's coming up. He's like, I'm going to test myself. And I know that Fabio's the man in this country, but I'm going to go after it. We need more things where people dare to be great. And you can only dare to be great when you take on a fight that you don't know if you can win. You got to try to win it. You got to try to figure out how you can win it. And that's kind of what this game is. You know, that's what the sport is. And it's a lot of fun that Manachai is down to compete and, you know, travel international. And I'm hoping that he gets more opportunities, and I'm hoping that he shows more skill, because he's entertaining fighter. I enjoyed that performance, and I think more will come from Luke Turner down the road. Notables on the undercard, again, I didn't see any of these fights. Dale Hughes gets a KO victory over Dale Murray. Juan Cervantes gets a victory over Danny Edwards. Manny McGuire lost by points to, I believe it's pronounced Mick Eslick. And then Luke Emerson lost by points to Jackson Barkhouse. So I wanted to mention those names. Again, I was not able to see those fights. But some of the fights popped up on YouTube. And some of them popped up on, you know, Instagram clips and Facebook fights were the main thing that I was able to see. So definitely enjoyed what I saw there. But I'm going to go ahead and stay Muay Thai. I'm going to stay in the country of England as well. And I'm going to go ahead and take us to the Muay Thai Grand Prix. The card was pretty tame in general, but I thought that, you know, the fights that I watched, the Daniel Terry versus Paul Barber fight was all action. That thing was awesome. But I thought there was a solid action. You know, I'll go ahead and say, I'll take tame out of it, and I'd say there was solid action, and that fight was enough to make me think of the whole card as great. I think that there are performances that I've seen better from individuals. I'll go ahead and start breaking them down. First and foremost, Damian Trainer makes his great return. He gets a split decision victory over Adrian Lopez. Damian Trainer in this fight, you could see the layoff affected him in terms of his comfort with volume, but his ability to score effective offense was still there. So when he got his low kick game going in round one, he scored it. When he threw clean, effective punches, he scored them. Adrian Lopez, you know, who at times I thought he did himself a disservice with the kind of the, I won't say taunting, but the, that didn't hurt me, the bravado, the, you know, waving him on, that kind of stuff, whatever. Those don't score on scorecards. Adrian Lopez did his best work when he got into his combination game. Threw him volume, combination low kicks. He was able to have moments where Trainer, who again was trying to work his way back into absence, he had some good moments where he was landing effective offense for a long period of time. And then Trainer would hit him back, because Trainer was the, clearly Trainer's scores were the hardest scores. So whenever Adrian got hit with something significant, it's almost like he took a moment to kind of, you know, do some sort of intimidating-esque gesture to, you know, show that he wasn't hurt, or, you know, wave him on, or that kind of deal, whatever. But it kind of did him as a service. I think he would have been better off just bite down on the mouthpiece and returning with more offense. And sometimes that's kind of how it's got to be. You know, Muhammad Kamal, when he went against Artur Kashenko in the K1 Grand Prix, five years ago, when that fight happened, the thing that most people remember about it is, I thought Kashenko had moments where he scored fine, but Muhammad Kamal's mentality to continue to just throw back no matter what he was hit with, even though he took some good shots here and there, it just erased the momentum of what a big shot would do. So if Trainer scored on Lopez, it was to his benefit to just go ahead and work on clean, effective offense and return. And sometimes he would just call him on, wave him on, do something for the crowd. And Damian Trainer was about that work. And when he, as he's working back into it, if Lopez didn't offer a opening for offense, or if he did the kind of wave on, Trainer just used that as a break. Catch his breath, move to the side, look for offense. Not suggesting that he's tired, just suggesting that, okay, I won't score when you're looking for me to score. I'll let you pursue a little bit, and then I'll find offense. Or I'll let you get into your combo flow, and then I'll find my big counter in between. Trainer played the game like the more experienced, savvy fighter. Lopez played the game like a guy who's trying to prove that he belonged. And I think that's the reason why Trainer won the split decision and Lopez did not. Moving on in the card, James Dean gets a victory over Hakim Harness. James Dean is a guy who he has got victories over pretty much everybody in the weight class around the 55 kg mark. You know, even as I mentioned, Trainer, that fight was at 55 kgs. James Dean's fought down there before. Andy Housen is another one that campaigns really low like that. These guys are good names for Glory to, for K1 to consider for their 55 kg weight class because you want to have some different people. And I think Damian Trainor's style holds up really well for if you want to do kickboxing. James Dean, I still feel he's more Muay Thai, but he has a really good ability to use his athleticism, even if he is down on points, to have the right kind of aggression, get you off balance, score a dump, or score something with the elbow that scores big for him. He's a name that I want to see more. So anytime I see James Dean has a win, I'm like, man, we got to get this guy over to Japan. I think they'd like him a lot. Very, very skilled fighter. Fun that he is competing and, he's been doing it for a while and I'm sure he probably makes most of his money in this sport, training people, you know, doing privates and so on, outside of the money that he would make, you know, from per fight purses. But as long as he's in the game, I'm happy. He's good. He's good. Good guy in the sport and I want to see more of him. Iman Barlow gets a victory over Maria Lobo. Iman Barlow, one of the best fighters on the planet, and 54 kgs is the glamour division in the women's kickboxing and Muay Thai. It was a weird fight for Iman, and shout out to Maria Lobo who gave the right kind of resistance. Maria Lobo has fought a lot of good girls in the sport. You know, she's Samantha Van Dorn, and I can't think of too many promotions that didn't at some period of time use Maria Lobo, whether, you know, Germany or Holland or wherever, they, you know, the Spanish fighters used quite often. Thought she was good in terms of Iman Barlow is so strong that she can win with her distance, with her body kicks, and with her, you know, clinch, of course, and her dumps. But Maria Lobo was able to return a game that Iman had scored really well in early. Iman was scoring combination, she went high kick, and the third one kind of got through and scored well to Lobo's head. But then Lobo kind of went back to work, and when she did, Lobo would throw a kick, Iman would catch it, dump her, and finish. So early, she was able to score that. Then, all of a sudden, second round, Lobo would catch Iman's kick and then score dumps on her. So as we went to rounds 3 and 4, whenever Iman caught the kick, Maria would just bounce and try to get herself to the ropes. So Iman wasn't able to finish the dump because Maria would get to the ropes and hold on. So Iman would have to pressure and look to score knees and so on. I thought Maria Lobo did a good job of competing in the clinch. She just didn't have a good understanding of the turn. So like when they're in there and they're pummeling, there are moments where I thought Lobo had, you know, good both forearms in the collarbone. She's got the hands tied up behind the neck, but then Iman would look to score knees in that position or pummel. And the moment she pummeled, Iman would turn her. And then as you got to rounds 3, 4, and 5, the turns were more significant because Maria was slowing down from the wear of being thrown to the ground, of being, you know, pushed into the ropes. I thought Iman's best round was round 4. I thought overall wasn't one of her best performances. She's been much cleaner. She's working her boxing, but right now the boxing is scoring in singles and not multiples. So Iman definitely could use a jab-jab cross, like that type of offense would help for this kind of level. Instead, she usually plays it, you know, two combination games, usually how she plays her fights. But she's so strong, she's so savvy with her movement, her kicks are really well timed. And then if you can't beat Iman in the clinch, she's going to be a tough fight for you. You know, like she's always going to be tough for anybody, but in particular if you're not strong in the clinch. So good one for Iman Barlow. Things moving forward, she's defending her. She is the girl, so she's defending her title next month in Slovakia. So we know it's coming from her. Maria Lobo is the type of name that I want to see for girls to test themselves against. If you want to get yourself to that higher level, that Anissa Mexen, Iman Barlow, Tiffany Von Soest, Denisa Kielholz type level, you know, you want to see yourself at the top, you got to have a Maria Lobo on your resume because she really is a tough fighter, and you'll know if you belong if you can beat her. But I think she's going to beat a lot of those girls because she's very strong and does some good things, especially in Muay Thai. I can imagine, I think they said that she had a victory over Ruth Ashdown, and that just shows her strength. And I would have picked, if I'd known about that fight, I would have picked Ashdown on skill, but Lobo on strength. And it seems like she can get those good victories. So definitely keep an eye out for her, and she'll keep competing and getting her hands raised. Next fight on this card I'm going to talk about is I'll save the fight of the night for last. I'll talk about Daniel McGowan getting a victory over Victor Saravia. This, first and foremost, is awesome that Victor Saravia is fighting over in England against Daniel McGowan. And this fight was significant for me in two ways. Number one, this is the biggest thing. It shows me how big Lion Fight's getting. Now, of course, there was that report that, you know, Lion Fight, they're having some commission troubles and some financial troubles. Of course, I mentioned how Tiffany Von Soos didn't get paid last time and that kind of deal, whatever. But they continue to bring in international people. People wonder if they were expanding too fast, bringing in too many international fighters and so on. That was kind of the worry. But the thing that's helping me realize that it's getting bigger was twofold. Number one, Victor Saravia, his resume has been built predominantly in the Lion Fight brand. So as soon as I saw him out here fighting in England, I was like, perfect, perfect. This is where you need to be. Kai Hollenbach should pretty much never fight a Westerner. He's like already bigger and stronger. Someone from America. If he fights like Josh Johnson, I'm down with that. But like, he's better than everyone in America. He's bigger and stronger, and no one's going to give him competitive resistance. If he's going to find out how good he is in Full Rules Muay Thai, he's going to have to go to, you know, Europe, or he's going to have to, you know, fight some of these better guys, Jordan Watson-esque guys. That's another good fight for Jordan Watson when they do the other Yakao later, and I think they're going back to England in October. Kai Hollenbach's a good name. Big, strong guy who has no business fighting guys from America. He's better. He's bigger and stronger. So those guys aren't going to give him resistance. So when I saw that Victor Saravia was out there blowing guys out, the first thing I thought was, what are they going to do with this kid? How are they going to move him forward? They're going to run out of guys for him to fight in the States. And then I see that he's fighting Daniel McGowan, and I'm like, all right, that's all action. That's what I want to see. Daniel McGowan gets the low kick. It's really an entertaining fight. Daniel McGowan gets the low kicks going early. Victor Saravia knew he had the advantage in the hands. Plus, he felt like he couldn't be hurt by Daniel McGowan. So he was closing the distance, confident, bite down his mouthpiece, letting go big shots. Second round, Victor's scoring a little bit more with his hands. He rips an awesome left hook to the body. Daniel McGowan's hurt by it, backs up to the ropes, elbows drop. Saravia closes the gap. Right overhand, drops McGowan. McGowan's in the corner. They give him the count. As soon as he gets up from the count, McGowan is still on, you know, a little bit, you know, unsteady legs, but he's using his vision. This is the importance of people. So if you're training any fighter, you got to do drills where you just make sure that they just use their eyes. Like, everything can't just be about fight flow. Sometimes you've got to see it and respond. You got to be able to understand this is what opening is available. McGowan said after he was hurt, he knew that big shots were coming, so he just decided that he was going to wait and then try to score in between. And he's pretty much explaining this. It's probably one of the best explanations I've ever heard from somebody who had just been dropped. But he looked for his moment and he just started to sit on elbows. And it still meant that he got cracked. Victor Saravia would score here and there, but mostly Victor was looking for KO shots. And Daniel McGowan had just slowed down, and as soon as a big shot would come by, he would throw a right elbow. Another big shot, try to be defensive, throw another elbow. Like, he tried to throw in between. And you'd see it, because when someone throws that big hulking overhand shot, they've committed their body to it. So the moment that it scores on the side of the gloves or misses behind the head or misses completely, you've got your avenue to throw your return strike. McGowan was able to cut him twice. They went and they looked at the cut and they decided to stop it. It's always heartbreaking whenever you see it. You know, that is the game. Saravia goes all the way out there to England. He's performing well. He wants to win. And he shows on, you know, just athleticism and good coaching, he's able to close the gap over an experienced fighter. Daniel McGowan then gets on the mic and says, you know, two things that I thought were crazy. Number one, as I talked about before, it told me how big Lion Fight is. Daniel McGowan said, I hope this victory is big enough to get me another fight on Lion Fight. Would have never thought that in a million years a year ago. Would have never thought that a fighter in England would be like, I hope this gets me another opportunity in America. Would have never thought that in a million years. So when he said that, I was like, Lion Fight's moving. Like, despite what's happened with Tiffany and so on, their commission stuff and how they're changing sanctioning bodies and that kind of stuff, whatever. The situation with changing the scorecard, or, you know, to, you know, a couple weeks ago. It's just all that kind of stuff. They're still being seen as a really cool opportunity for Muay Thai fighters. I'm not even sure what McGowan got paid, but he saw that as an opportunity that he wanted again. As the first thing that he said. And then the second thing he said was the thing that I completely forgot in the moment, but I remembered it so vividly when it happened, and I remembered it so vividly when he brought it back up. What happened to Victor Saravia happened to Daniel McGowan when he fought on Lion Fight. I can't remember the number of it, but when he fought when he fought Romy Adanza, Romy was pretty much being schooled by Daniel McGowan, like just scoring everything he wanted. I think he dropped him a couple times. He was scoring everything. And then all of a sudden, a big elbow scores, cuts his lip, drops McGowan. McGowan goes down, gets back up. Same thing. He's kind of more like surprised that it got him, but the cut was bad. As soon as they looked at it, I don't even think they got it to the doctor before the ref waved it off. And McGowan just sunk to the ground, just devastated. And so when he got on the mic and he said, "That's what happened to me in America," I was like, I completely forgot. That's the game. Cuts are part of Muay Thai, and it can work in your favor, it can work against you. And in the way that Victor felt like, you know, McGowan got lucky, in that same way, McGowan probably felt that Romy Adanza got lucky. That's just the nature of the game. This is a sport that's got the 100-point goal. We've got the, you know, 70-point shot. We've got the 80-point touchdown. We've got the one score that can change everything at any moment in the fight. And it's one of the things that make it great. So despite what's going on in the fight, the flow of it, who's going to get what decision, you get stopped, you get stopped. And I personally would have liked them to allow Victor Saravia to go on, particularly when I look at the blood that was coming from Paul Barber. But good stuff by both guys. A rematch. I definitely want to see a rematch. Daniel McGowan, it's good to fight anybody. I'd like to see. I don't know if he's fought Daniel Trainer or Trainer before, because I think he was coming up when Trainer was out of the sport. So maybe McGowan and Trainer would be fun. Victor Saravia, same thing. There's nobody in this card wouldn't want to see him in a fight against. Dean James would be a fun fight too. He's all action. So good stuff on the card. Good stuff. Could go ahead and go to the fight of the night on this card. Paul Barber gets a KO victory over Daniel Terry, or TKO victory over Daniel Terry. It's the most entertaining, more so one-sided fight that I've seen in a while. I thought that Daniel Terry had some moments early in the first round, you know, but for the most part, I thought Paul Barber got going. He was so aggressive with his elbows, aggressive with his kick games, but when he got into the clinch and he got into those positions where he could let elbows go, Terry didn't seem to have an answer. But what made it awesome was Terry wasn't going anywhere. Bit down on the mouthpiece, stood right in front of him, looked to throw heat, looked to throw overhands, caught Barber with big shots, took big shots, but Barber just kept wearing on him, kept scoring effective offense, kept pushing that pace. He scored another down in the second, then at the end of the third, I want to say, or the beginning of the fourth. I think it was at the end of the third. I can't remember specifically. He put together a barrage of offense, and Terry was in trouble. Because worse, when Terry got in bad shape or he got hit hard, he never put up his guard. He just kept throwing. And, you know, he never said, "I need to hide behind the air muffs for a little bit to recover. I need to use my legs for a little bit to recover." He would just throw. Or he tried to lean out of the way. And usually when they try to lean, the fatigue will fail them, their legs won't take them back as far, and eventually you land that big shot. So, fun stuff. Paul Barber and his victory over Daniel Terry. It's one it's crazy because early in the fight, Daniel Terry lands an elbow that busts Paul Barber up, and it was a cut to the level that made me wonder, you know, if they're going to stop the Victor fight, you know, they'll stop this. But I'm watching on YouTube, so I see that there's, you know, 24 minutes, so I know they're not going to stop it. But that one of the things that made the fight so cool was as Paul Barber's landing all these elbows and landing all this offense, the whole, I guess, fight, the cut kept opening and his face was like a bloody mask for like, you know, I was trying to think in my mind, how long did they clean it up? They cleaned it up after the first round, but then immediately in the second round, just started bleeding. It was all over the face. So he's wearing this mask of blood as he's doing all this stuff. So it just looks like some straight warrior stuff. So if you want to see a really entertaining fight, definitely check that one out. These fights are on YouTube. So the three or four of them for sure that I mentioned. But Paul Barber versus Daniel Terry, go to MTGP3. And then you should be able to find it. Like, that's what it's under. So you wouldn't find it under Muay Thai Grand Prix. You have to go MTGP and then put space and then 3 and put that into your iTunes search engine. And I think it'll pop up. Now, again, they've got other fights from their promotion back in the day, but I think you guys will enjoy it. Definitely check that out. Next fight card I'm going to talk about was a fight card that I didn't think was going to happen. We had a... I saw a rumor that I mentioned on the show when the San Juan Puerto Rico Super Combat fight was happening that I was excited about it. I thought that the company was branching out, coming to America. I thought that was cool and so on, whatever. But as we got closer to the date, I saw that one of the fights was dropped from the card. So I thought the whole card was done. Wrong. They still did it. They did it in a small venue, which was good. They had a decent audience for the small venue. And I thought that the fights that I was able to get a hold of were all right, because there were stoppages in a lot of the main card fights. I want to say three of the – hold on, let me double check. One, two, three. So between the new heroes and the main card, I see 6 stoppages here. And that's always good because people want to see KOs. You know, they want to see KOs when they show up. Angela Whitley getting a – TKO victory over Christiana Stanku is good because, again, Angela Whitley is a girl that I want to watch moving forward because she's a young name in the sport, and Christiana Stanku is someone that they're trying to push for the promotion. So for her to get the win over the Romanian is good. Good stuff for Angela. There were some names on the undercard that I'm not as familiar with. We get to the main card. Christian Spektu, I am familiar with him. He gets a TKO stoppage over Haran Hasanov. Alex Phillip, I've seen him fight before. He gets a victory over Brian Day. But the only fight that anybody's really, really talking about for this card is the Daniel Sam victory over Kaitlyn Morisano. It was a split decision, and if you're going to think anybody's going to get a close fight decision, it's going to go to Kaitlyn Morisano. The problem with this fight is Morisano's style of throwing those big overhand haymaking shots and pushing the pace or whatever. If you're not throwing with enough activity, it's pretty easy for him to get up on the cards and get a victory. Daniel Sam came out, and actually, you know, I thought round one was closer than how most people had it. Daniel Sam's game plan round one was play a distant game and to try to time knees, step-up knees, and jumping knees when Kaitlyn Morisano came at him. This is great strategy. Why? Catalano doesn't throw straight punches. So when Kaitlyn comes in, he's usually throwing hooks. He's throwing to the body, he's throwing wide. His shots are usually blocked on the outside of the gloves, not the inside of the gloves. That's something that I use with my students sometimes. That just means that he's catching hooks more than he's parrying straight shots. So the way he plays his offense, Catalan's going to be a guy where you've got to block in kickboxing with the outside of your gloves. You got to get your arm up. You got to make sure that you're behind some good earmuffs. You don't have to worry so much about the shots coming down the middle that you need to use, you know, pick off with parries and, you know, shoulder rolls and so on. But I thought Daniel Sam made a count for himself. So scoring the knees, Kaitlyn Morisano would always throw the volume, come in. He missed a lot of hooks, and a lot of his hooks were blocked in the arms. I didn't think a lot of them got through clean. And I also thought that Daniel Sam found some moments to score clean single shots. He just never built on them, you know? And I can see round one being closer. Again, Kaitlyn Morisano had the volume, and he was still scoring a shot every once in a while that looked like it buzzed Daniel Sam. But I think it was game plan. I think every time Sam felt something big kind of land, instead of looking to get into firefights, he earmuffed up and waited to the storm pass, and then he looked for offense later. Round two is where it's a little bit harder for me. To me, even though Sam was playing the same game, scoring in singles, I thought Kaitlyn Morisano was scoring the majority of the significant scores in round two. I thought that he was, you know, getting his offense through. I thought he was getting behind the earmuffs. I thought he was, you know, finding shots to the body. I still felt most of them were defended. Most of them didn't get significant scoring, didn't have significant impact here and there for most of that round. But I also thought that Daniel Sam didn't offer enough return offense. So before we go into the last 10 seconds of the round, I leaned towards Kaitlyn Morisano. Then it looked like he buzzed Daniel Sam a little bit, and even if he didn't buzz him, he just let go offense for like 10, 15 seconds straight at the end of the round. And I think that that's an easy way to give him the round. Round three seemed like Daniel Sam was just kind of standing up, and Kellen Marisano was looking for offense and still throwing, and he just didn't have the pop because he had slowed as Daniel had blocked a lot of things in the arm. Daniel scored here and there, but I just thought round three was more him just trying to get out of the round. Like, in particular, that last minute of the round, he kind of had some long lays on the ropes and moving around. So when the cards are red and Daniel Sam gets the win, you know, I mean, happy for Daniel Sam. He's been doing his thing. But if you're a Romanian fan, you're upset by this, I see validation in your argument. Kellen Marisano, no question about it, probably got a win that he didn't necessarily deserve. And what I mean by that, Kellen Marisano missed out on a win that he did deserve. I thought that he did enough. My apologies there. Kellen Marisano should have been the winner, in my opinion. I'm fine that Daniel Sam was able to get on this side of the scorecards because he's had some close ones go against him in the past. Daniel Sam's a good, strong guy. I think he's a legit heavyweight. I think he's a good guy for Glory and any other promotion that wants to use him. I just thought that Kellen Marisano should have gotten his hand raised in this one, but all in all, it was still good stuff. I was still pleased by the performance, and I thought that it was a fun card. I enjoyed it a lot. Going to go ahead and move on to breaking down a card. The card that I'm going to break down right now is going down in Holland. And it's one of those things where it's like, I love the sport so much, and whenever I see someone doing good things and putting on a promotion that gives fight opportunities, I'm usually all in. Gung-ho, super, super, super happy and proud of it. World Fighting League, that's, you know, I won't say it's exclusively won by Melvin Manhoff, but pretty much backed by Melvin Manhoff. When I saw that that fight was coming together, I was super excited and super pleased with how things were going. And like the fact that they're on there, I want to say the fourth show, and all the shows are stacked cards top to bottom. There really is great kickboxing going on. I told someone the other day, I wrote, you guys saw the write-up I did for Liver Kick, and I said this is like one of the best times to be a fan of kickboxing because of the content that we've got. World Fighting League, do us a favor and make sure you get this stuff online so that we can see it. Get videos up right away. Get your own YouTube page. Make sure that people can see it because you're putting on great fights. And this card this weekend is just an awesome, awesome card. If you replace the WFL with Glory, I look at this card and be like, oh yeah, it looks like a Glory card, you know? So I'm that pleased with how this card came together. Let's go ahead and go down it. We've got prospects. We've got female fights. It's just a complete card. I'm not going to talk about all the fights, but I'm going to talk about most of them. Let's start off with, and we'll go top to bottom, Andy Sauer versus Muhammad Kamal is the headliner on this one. This is good kickboxing. Good guys who have been in the sport for a while. Muhammad Kamal is still a pretty young guy. Andy Sauer is an older guy, but styles make fights, and they're, you know, world title fights, what they're supposed to be. I'm hoping that it's five rounds. I think it's three. But it's going to be some heavy kickboxing action there. I got a slight lean towards Muhammad Kamal. I think Andy Sauer loses here and there to guys that I feel he's better than. Muhammad Kamal is a guy who's always had the skill set to beat Andy Sauer anyways. So when Andy Sauer was in his prime, Muhammad Kamal has the ability to get W's over him. He's very, very talented. I think that he can stay with his combination flow a little bit more consistently. Andy Sauer should be doing fine because, you know, he's got the southpaw in front of him. You know, he's got that the style that he likes. The orthodox stance in front of him. He gets into his combination flow a little bit easier there than he does with the southpaw. But I think it's a great fight. I love it. I think it's going to be all action. I can't wait for this one to emerge. Muhammad Kamal, of course, had success with Shahida El-Haj of K-1 fame back in the day. It's an all-action fight that's great to have at the top of your card. Luis Tavares versus Raiden Caro. Caro, again, from Muay Thai Gym, one of the best fighters in the world. He should be signed to Glory. Like, he's that talented of a fighter. I won't say there's no reason for him not to be used there, but because he's been used on Super Combat for so much. But he's a very, very good fighter. He's got stoppage power. He's got an interesting style. Luis Tavares is very skilled. He's a good fighter. He can get some wins at, you know, the what would be middleweight division for Glory. I could see him getting some W's there too. This is a good fight. Really, really excited about it. Should be a lot of fun, and I'm hoping that these guys really put on a good show. I've got Rodan Caro winning it. I think he's in a special kind of groove right now. He's scoring really well. I like his skill set. It should be a lot of fun. Ibrahim Elboni is going to take on Fred Seeking. You guys know how I feel about Fred Seeking. He is a guy who's going to show up. He's going to give his best effort. He's going to leave it in the ring. I just feel like most of the guys that he goes against have a skill advantage over him, and they have just that little bit extra to make sure that they score more than him when it comes to his step-up outings. Now, I think Bony has the opportunity to be that type of step-up opportunity. I think that he can outscore him. Wouldn't be surprised if Sikin got the victory, but I lean towards Ibrahim El-Bouni. I think that he's just going to offer a little bit more in total offense. Fred Sikin, he'll score here and there. Just those gaps. Those gaps are the thing that just does him in. So I've got Bouni winning this one. Marcelo Adriansk takes on Sam Tevede. Again, I am only somewhat familiar with Sam. I've heard his name just a few times. He's one of Melvin Manhoff's guys. I've seen Marcelo fight before. I've got Marcelo winning that one. He's been used on Infusion, if I'm remembering correctly, in the past. I'm curious to see how that one plays out because I'm not sold on either guy yet. I just want to see more performances, and that'll kind of give me a better insight of what I'm seeing. Brian Doe's the Kumite champion. That's right. He won the one that was in. He actually won a version of it in Japan somewhere. That's the same one that the movie is famed after. He won that version of it. Clearly, the better fighters in the world don't go anywhere near that. But it's awesome that Doz is fighting. He's going against Raul Cadenas. Cadenas, of course, is going to bring that combination of low kick. He trains in Holland a lot. He was with Tom Harnik for a while. Still goes back and forth between Romania and Holland. This should be a good fight. I think Doz is going to win this fight. I think Raul Cadenas has got the ability to hurt him, stop him with something big. He's got that. Brian Doz doesn't bring that to the table. But Doz gets into his combination flow. I really think there's a good chance. I'm changing my pick. Raul Cadenas is going to win this fight. I think he's going to land something big. Score down at some period of time. Combination flow. His strong, stocky movements to walk people down. Changing my mind. Brian Doz, you're a good kid. Even though you're not a kid anymore. Raul Cadenas is going to win that fight. Next fight I'm going to break down is, and this one should be, there's nothing but good stuff all over this card, but this is another one for everybody who really loves the fight sport. Muhammad El Moussadi is going to take on Massaro Glunder. I'm going to go with Massaro Glunder. Moussadi is an entertaining fighter. I've seen him fight a couple of times, but I'm not as high on him as high as Massaro Glunder. I love Glunder. I love those step-up knees. I think he reminds me of a Lucien Corbin-styled fighter. I thought that he made a great account for himself when he fought Ku Fairtex recently. I think he's going to win this fight. I wouldn't be surprised if he scored a down or if he scored something significant to score a stoppage, but I think that he'll get a decision not here. Sam Braun taking on Daryl Sitchman. Sitchman, man, he's always been a good fighter. I thought that he was going to have a better career than he's had so far. Doesn't mean that he's bad. I just thought that he was going to have a more notable career, that more would come from him. Because when I first heard of him was through rumor. And rumor always helps. You know, it helps you to kind of like, okay, this guy's going to be something. Everybody's saying this guy's the next. And it just didn't work out. Like, he didn't become that it guy. Still a talented guy. Sim Braun, older. Majuro Gym stable, been there forever. I've got Sitchman winning just because I think he's a little younger. Sam Braun's been around for a really long time. He can get a veteran victory. He knows how to score effective shots and so on. But I'm going to go ahead and lean towards Sitchman getting the victory here. Merthyn Grinhart versus Marco Piquet. Got Merthyn Grinhart. Marco Piquet is an awesome fighter who's been fighting internationally. He's had so many great opportunities. And every once in a while, as soon as I think he's dead, he'll come out and have a performance that shocked me. He had one of the better performances against Yosin Klai. He clearly lost two rounds to Yosin Klai, came out round three, fought as if he just got there, had a great round with him. Thought that there was a really good chance that when he fought on the Legacy kickboxing event last year. Thought there was a good chance that he'd lose in Houston. I thought that Corley wasn't one of Corley's better nights. I thought Corley could definitely make a better account for himself. He's more skilled than he showed in that night. But I thought that Marco Piquet did what he came to do, landed those big overhand rights. He's the same kind of right hand that got him the victory over Sean Wright in Jamaica 6 years ago. That kid can still find he's not a kid anymore, but he could still find that right hand and he could still crack a little bit. But he's not going to be Merthyn Grinhart. Merthyn Grinhart's going to be motivated, embarrassed. He's upset by what happened. Well, not super upset, but upset by what happened when he fought in France a couple weeks ago. He's motivated. I think he's going to come out here looking to score something big. I wouldn't be surprised if he got a jumping knee stoppage or something like that. I think Merthyn Grinhart's going to bring it. Going to go ahead and go to the tournament layout they've got. So a lot of this that I've been talking about, it's, I don't know if it's going to be like a one-night tournament, but I'm just kind of breaking these fights down as I see them. I don't know how the tournament bracket's going to play out. For example, the Marcelo Ajansk and Sam Tvet and Raul Katanis and Brian Doze, those seem to be like the tournaments that are putting together. I don't know if the finals on this night. That's why I didn't bring it up. But that's the tournament there. And then we've got Mercer Gennaro, Marco Pihe, and then the winner of that one goes against Simbrong and Daryl Sitchman. If that's the case, Mercer Gennaro is going to beat Sitchman, and Katanis is going to beat Marcelo Andrianz, if that's the case. Last one on the card, and I won't talk about all these. Let's go ahead and finish it up. Yona Wymans is going to take on Dariel Alberts. I know Dariel Alberts. I actually met her in the States. She'd been training down here. She, super nice girl. I met her in, what was it? It wasn't in the States. It was in Canada. She was out there in Canada for some reason. Then she ended up going to the Bellator show, and that's when I met her at the Bellator show. Super nice, dedicated to her kickboxing. She's been training with Andy Sauer's crew for quite some time. I'm actually curious. Let me see. What is she listed? What gym is she under? It says Team Aries here. But yeah, she's German-based. She's been fighting there for a long time. But I still like Yona Wyman's skill set. She's all-action kickboxer. Very, very entertaining, very skilled fighter. Anessa Hedoy, I'd like to see more of her. I don't see her beating Sheena Wendershoven, though. Sheena Wendershoven's very skilled. She's in Fusion Champion. I've got her winning that fight. And then I'm going to go ahead and go with Yona Wyman's winning the tournament. So if this all gets settled tonight on this card, I'll get Yona Wyman's winning that tournament. So that's it. I'll go ahead and leave the rest of those fights off, and I'll go ahead and wrap up the show. Should be back next week. I've been super busy myself, getting ready to move, getting ready to open my gym. Thank you to all the people who've been following kickboxing and been supporting the sport. Clearly, I mean, there's kickboxing news and notes that's been kicked out or kicked around lately. Zach Picasa is back. He's going to be on the Glory card next week, and that's going to be super fun. Ravi Bernal is a guy who's been making some noise in Brazil. It's time for him to fight international. So he's going to go against Jordan Petrosian. Not what I would call the best first international opportunity, but that's what you want. You want to go ahead and test yourself at some period of time. So I'm happy that he's getting the opportunity to go out there and improve his brand. He's got some fights online. So for those of you guys who want to see, put a face or a skill set to the name, Ravybrunow, Ravi Bernal. Go ahead and check him out. He's got some stuff out there I think you'll like. We got more kickboxing coming up every week, people. We've got another Glory coming up. We've got the Bellator kickboxing event. That's the same weekend. We've got some good stuff. We're really blessed. There's a lot of kickboxing going down. Simon Marcus versus Dustin Jacoby was made official, for those who are wondering. That's going to happen in Los Angeles next month. I'm excited about what's happening in the sport. I'm excited about these opportunities. The sport is so big that Bukau fought the other day and won. And I didn't even bring it up to the very end of the show. It was just another Bukau doing his thing over a inferior opposition. Albert Krauss lost on that card. He lost to Gugui, if I'm remembering that dude's name correctly. Hold on, let me check it. Yeah, I believe it's Gugui. But we've got so much kickboxing going on that I didn't get to the Bukau fight to the very end, and he got a quick mention. So I'm glad what's going on in the sport. I'm happy that the athletes we love are getting the opportunities, and I'm happy that you, the listeners, have been following my podcast for as long as you've had. So thank you very much. Spread the word about my podcast. Post it anywhere. And God bless, and everybody have a good one. Peace.